Welcome to Books vs. Movies. In this podcast, I set out to answer the age-old question, is the book really always better than the movie? I'm Yuvia, an actress and book lover based out of the New York City area, and today we will be discussing The Plot Against America by Philip Roth and its 2020 miniseries adaptation, The Plot Against America. So hi, everyone. As you can hear, I am still congested. I'm actually filming this right after filming You Should Have Known because I'm kind of behind on my episodes, but that's okay. We're moving along. We're trudging along. We're going. Anyway, so yes, today we will be discussing The Plot Against America. This is another special episode of Books versus Miniseries. And yeah, so The Plot Against America by Philip Roth was first published in 2004, and it imagines an alternate American history in which Charles A. Lindbergh is elected president in 1940, beating out FDR, who we know was actually elected for his third term in that time. Charles Lindbergh, after being elected president, becomes really good friends with Adolf Hitler and starts almost like an alliance, pretty much an alliance with Hitler. This story is written from the point of view of Philip, who is an 8-year-old boy who is living in Newark, New Jersey with his mother, his father, and his older brother. The Plot Against America miniseries premiered in 2020 on HBO, and it follows the characters of Newark, New Jersey, in which they live in an alternate history in which Charles Lindbergh is elected president in 1940 as opposed to FDR. So yes, as you can see, this is a pretty faithful adaptation. Now, it is a faithful adaptation. Again, this is another one in which I saw the miniseries before I read the book. And I was very surprised by one of the biggest change is that the Aunt Evelyn, played by Winona Ryder in the TV series, you know, she has a pretty big role. She's prominently featured in every episode. She's in a good chunk of all the episodes. And let me clarify. When I say a good chunk of all the episodes, I mean she's in a good chunk of each of the episodes. There we go. That's what I mean. So she's like heavily featured. She is, it's definitely an ensemble piece. And while the book is told from the point of view of Philip, the little boy, the TV series mainly focuses on Elizabeth and Herman Levin, played by Zoe Kazan, and Morgan Spector, which are the parents. And I can see why that they made that change. While it is told from the point of view of a little boy, very mature sounding for his age, I might say, I think it just makes more sense to follow it from the adult's point of view in the TV series, since this is, you know, definitely not a story for kids. It's definitely for the adults. But yes, as I was saying, Aunt Evelyn is heavily featured. She is one of the main characters, and she is practically non-existent in the book. She exists. Philip mentions her. She's mentioned in one sentence in one chapter at the beginning, and then she's mentioned in another chapter for one sentence in the middle. And then towards the end, she's featured a little bit more. We will talk about how and why. And yeah, but that was just something that really surprised me. I was like, wow, Aunt Evelyn is not a big role, or she's not meant to be, and they made her one. So that was pretty cool. I mean, it is Winona Ryder, so she's great. Yeah, so that's definitely like the biggest change that I noticed. Otherwise, it's pretty much faithfully adapted. We'll talk about the differences here and there, but we start off in, this is in both. I'll mention the differences when we get there, but we meet Herman Levin. Again, he's the father, and we start off the series and the book in June 1940. And kind of just meeting the characters at this point. We meet Herman, we meet his wife, Bess, we meet Bess's sister, Evelyn, and we meet Rabbi Bengelsdorf, who, again, very important character. Rabbi Bengelsdorf, played by John Turturro, very important character in the TV series. He's mentioned as about as much as Aunt Evelyn is in the book, which means to say he's pretty much non-existent. The story really, really only the book really only focuses on Philip, his brother Sandy, and his parents. And sometimes we'll meet, like I said, they'll talk to Aunt Evelyn or they'll talk to Rabbi Bengelsdorf, but they are not important characters. And in the TV series, like, this is very much, those are like the four main characters. Evelyn is also, she's the older sister, I'm guessing because they cast Winona Ryder, who's older than Zoe Kazan, but she's the older sister in the TV series. But in the book, she's actually the younger sister. And yeah, Evelyn's main job is to take care of her and Bess's mom, since she is an old maid in the TV series. So she's a substitute teacher, but she also mainly takes care of their mom, who has dementia. So in the book, the living grandma is the dad's mom, not the mom's mom. It probably made that change to accommodate Evelyn's bigger role. The grandma isn't heavily featured in the book or in the TV series, just a minor change that I thought was interesting. Again, if I had to speculate as to why, it's probably to make up for Evelyn's more prominent role and give her something more to do. But yes, the other important character in both the book and the TV series is Alvin. Alvin is the orphaned son of Herman's older brother. So Herman has two brothers. Actually, I think they're both older than him. So Alvin is the oldest brother's son, but his parents both died. And so Herman has kind of taken Alvin under his wing and has been raising him, and now that Alvin is an adult, kind of just there to offer him advice and, you know, still be the father figure. Alvin ends up joining the Canadian military once it seems pretty obvious that Lindbergh is going to win the war. I mean, not win the war, win the presidency. And once Lindbergh wins the presidency, so Charles Lindbergh, the actual Charles Lindbergh historical figure, was himself very anti-Semitic. So this is reflected in this alternate history in which crime, like anti-Semitic hate crimes, start going up. There's just a lot of anti-Semitic incidents. Rabbi Bengelsdorf is, and Evelyn do end up falling in love. Well, no, I wouldn't say they're in love. Definitely not. It's definitely a marriage of convenience for both of them. But Rabbi Bengelsdorf and Aunt Evelyn end up getting married. In the TV series, it's definitely implied that she, you know, she was having an affair with a married man, and then once it's obvious that he's not going to leave his wife to be with her, she breaks things off with him shortly after, meets Rabbi Bengelsdorf, and then he pretty much, she's really pretty, she's really attractive, so he's like, this is the woman that I'm going to marry, and she's smitten by him. And it's heavily implied in the TV series that the reason for that is because she is an old maid, she's desperate to get married and, you know, be a wife. In the book, it's still like a marriage of convenience for her, but I mean, I guess she's in her 30s, I guess in the 40s that was kind of considered an old maid at that point, but she was instantly smitten by him. It's more of, she's just, he's very charming and she's smitten by him, and you know, it's like a power move for her, definitely in the book, to be like, oh yeah, this powerful man who's, well, we'll get into it, but this powerful man wants to marry me, hell yeah. So the reason I'm calling Rabbi Bengelsdorf a powerful man is because he is on Charles Lindbergh's side. Despite the fact that Charles Lindbergh is anti-Semitic, he thinks that Lindbergh will stop the U.S. from going to war. And so he's very anti-war, and he wants to ensure that the U.S. doesn't enter the current world war. So he's all about Lindbergh. And Lindbergh, of course, sees that this well-respected Jewish rabbi is like on his side. So he hires Rabbi Bengelsdorf to work in DC with him to, you know, get the, essentially Lindbergh is using Rabbi Bengelsdorf to get the Jewish people on his side. So Rabbi Bengelsdorf starts coming up with all these programs. One is called Just Folks, in which Jewish boys are sent away to live somewhere else for the summer. So, you know, they can get like that wholesome American experience and become more American American as opposed to being so Jewish. And Sandy is eager to do Just Folks, but his parents are a little bit more reluctant. Like his parents are everything anti-Lindbergh, and that includes they're not falling for Rabbi Bengelsdorf's, you know, charisma and his, oh no, I'm Jewish and I give Lindbergh my seal of approval. They're not falling for that. So they're very reluctant to let Sandy go. What convinces them in the TV show to let Sandy go is that they had a trip to Washington, D.C. planned already. And so they go. And even though there's like, at this point, Lindbergh is president, and there's this rise in anti-Semitism, they've already invested a lot of money on this trip. So they go on this trip to Washington, D.C. And the father, Herman, he is very opinionated. He is not afraid to speak his mind. And so he says a lot of inflammatory remarks about Lindbergh and how much he disagrees with Lindbergh. And Lindbergh is the worst thing to have happened to America. And so he pisses off a lot of people in D.C. that are very pro-Lindbergh. They end up getting kicked out of their hotel room because they're Jewish, essentially. But so there's this tour guide that, like, I guess this used to exist back in the day when it was a little bit safer. You could trust people a little bit more. But these tour guides would essentially drive your car and drive you all around DC and take you to all the touristy spots, but because they're DC natives, like, they know where to park, they know where, like, the good places to go eat that are more, like, more recognized by the locals and things like that. Bess is very fearful of trusting this strange man, again, rightfully so. There's a rise in anti-Semitism, but Herman is like, no, he's a tour guide, we can trust him. And it turns out that the tour guide is a very nice man. So after they experience, like, those bouts of anti-Semitism while in DC, Herman says, well, you know, if the people in the rest of the United States are kind of like the DC folk, they kind of suck. But if they're anything like our wonderful tour guide, they're someone worth meeting. And so he gives Sandy his consent to go to Just Folks. In the book, he kind of just changes his mind and is like, okay, yeah, no, I'm against it. And then he's like, well, you know what, let's just do it. It's fine. Just go. So he goes. And Alvin is in the Canadian military. He's fighting overseas. And then he ends up losing his leg in the war. And then we jump forward and Sandy has come back from the summer away in Kentucky. And he's become very involved with Just Folks at the Pride of Aunt Evelyn. And so he becomes kind of like the poster boy for Just Folks. And he goes around giving presentations on his experience and really trying to recruit other young boys to do Just Folks and participate in this program. So Sandy, kind of like how we talked about in You Should Have Known, or I should say The Undoing, because Henry in You Should Have Known was fine. Henry in The Undoing was very like, I'm a rebellious teenager because I'm a rebellious teenager. This is very much Sandy once again in the TV show. He is rebelling against everything his parents believe in because he's a teenager, really. In the book, it's a little bit more justified. Like, he's, you know, he's a 13-year-old kid and he doesn't fully understand the politics of, you know, that's going on around him. He's at that age where it's like he's curious about it and he wants to know more about it, but he doesn't have an opinion either way. It isn't until he goes to Just Folks and comes back and has a great time that he is fully on Aunt Evelyn, Rabbi Bengelsdorf, and Lindbergh's side. So it's a little bit more justified in the book. In the TV show, it's very much like, I'm a teenager and I hate my parents and I'm gonna go against them because they're my parents and I hate them. So there's that trope that Orlando hates so much. Again, we discussed it in The Undoing. We're discussing it now, and we will probably talk about it again in the future, because rebellious teenagers being rebellious just to be rebellious is definitely a trope. But anyway, Aunt Evelyn and Rabbi Bengelsdorf don't really get along with Herman and Bess. Their views are just, political views are just way too different. And this rift forms between the two of them, and Sandy kind of just joins Aunt Evelyn's side. And then at this point, Homestead 42 is created. And what Homestead 42 is, it's kind of like Just Folks, but instead of the teenage boys being sent away for the summer, entire Jewish families are relocated to a different part of the country. Again, this is in an effort to make them more American and not so Jewish. So, of course, Aunt Evelyn signs her family up to be a part of Homestead 42, and they are set to relocate to Kentucky. At this point, Philip does not want to move to Kentucky. He wants to stay in Newark with everything he's familiar. Of course, Sandy, he went to Kentucky for Just Folks, and he's excited to move to Kentucky. Yes. So Philip ends up going to his Aunt Evelyn's office. So even though they work for Lindbergh, their Aunt Evelyn and Rabbi Bengelsdorf office is still based in Newark, New Jersey. So after school one day, Philip goes to Aunt Evelyn's office and is like, why do we have to go to Kentucky? I don't want to go to Kentucky. I don't understand why we have to Kentucky. Why can't you send Selden and his mom to Kentucky instead of us? Selden is the little boy that lives downstairs, and Selden is very much he wants to be Philip's friend. Philip wants nothing to do with him because he's, you know, just a very nerdy child and he's not cool. So Philip does not want to be his friend. So he says this to Aunt Evelyn. Aunt Evelyn says, oh, you know, you'll like it. But she thinks that he's saying this because he doesn't want to be separated from Selden. So she signs up Selden and his mom to be part of Homestead 42, and they are also going to be relocated to Kentucky. And Bess is obviously very livid because Selden's mom is a widower. She just lost her husband a few months before this happens. And so she's like, why would you sign up this little boy and his family? And Philip feels really, really guilty that Selden and his mom also have to move to Kentucky, especially because the only reason that Herman is being relocated is because he is a MetLife insurance agent, and this relocation is part of Rabbi Bengelsdorf and Aunt Evelyn's plan, but it's only certain companies that are signed up to do this. So Herman quits his job so he and his family don't have to relocate. And Selden's mom also works at MetLife. So, I mean, she has no choice. She doesn't have the luxury to just quit. The only reason Herman has the luxury to quit is because he starts working for his brother. So he's guaranteed a job either way. Selden's mom has no choice. So she and Selden move to Kentucky, and Philip feels very guilty about this. The violent anti-Semitic incidents come to a head. Winchell, he is a really famous radio news broadcaster. He announces his bid for presidency for the 1944 election, and he ends up getting assassinated during one of his campaign stops, and his assassination just prompts this wave of anti-Semitism, and Selden's mom ends up murdered by the Ku Klux Klan in Kentucky. So Herman and Sandy drive all the way down to Kentucky, rescue Selden, bring him back. And at this point, after Winchell's assassination, Charles Lindbergh goes missing. He gets in his plane and he flies off, and the plane goes missing. His wife is put under arrest, and the vice president starts and basically encouraging all this anti-Semitism to happen. And so, you know, the Ku Klux Klan start killing all these Jewish people, and it's just not safe anymore. It is at this point where Rabbi Bengelsdorf figures out that his loyalty to Charles Lindbergh means nothing, because obviously no one, at the end of the day, he's a Jewish man. So DC and the rest of Charles Lindbergh's cabinet and vice president and everyone turn against him. So his life is also in danger. This is one of the biggest changes from the book in the TV series. And I'm so glad they changed this, actually, because this is like the best scene in the TV series, in which Evelyn shows up. You know, she's freaking out. She's like, my life is in danger. She goes to her sister's house and she says, my life is in danger. You need to help me. And her sister kicks her out and says, your life is in danger. You're not going to put my family's life in danger by staying here with us. You need to leave. You're not welcome here. And then so Evelyn starts leaving, and then Bess comes out, gives her sister a hug, kisses her, and says, you know, I love you. I will always love you. You're my sister, but I never, ever, ever want to see you again. And it is just, this is not in the book. This conversation, like, Evelyn shows up and Bess tells her to leave. And then Evelyn comes back and Philip sneaks her in, and she lives in the basement of the house until she's discovered. And then Bess again tells her to leave. But it is just so cathartic because, Winona Ryder just does such a good job of, like, playing, like, this snooty kind of, like, I know what I'm doing. This is the best thing that can happen to anyone. And then to just see her go from that to, like, oh my gosh, I'm so scared. And then and it's just so, it's so cathartic to see, like, this character that's like, ha, you see, that's right. You're getting what you deserve. Anyway, yeah, so that was the biggest change. Obviously, everything else is pretty faithful to the book. As you can see, I haven't deviated for much. Another change that was made from the book to the TV series, this one I disagreed with a little bit more. I wish they had kept it the way they kept it in the book. So actually there's two changes, but one of them I don't mind that they changed either way. Alvin, so after Alvin loses his leg in the war, obviously he has to come back. He lives with his aunt and uncle for a little bit, and then eventually he moves out. He falls in love with this other, before that happens, the family notices that they are being stalked by FBI agents, and they think that these FBI agents are stalking them in order to charge Alvin with some sort of crime for betrayal crime, because Alvin joined the Canadian military. And then it turns out that they are not FBI agents. They are a secret organization that is trying to assassinate Charles Lindbergh. So they've been spying on Alvin, and they hire him to as one of the people to try to shoot down Charles Lindbergh's plane. And this does not happen in the book. This only happens in the TV series. I don't feel strongly about it either way. I didn't miss it in the book. And I mean, it didn't really add anything in the TV series, I don't think, because they don't end up shooting down the plane. Charles Lindbergh's plane goes missing before they can even attempt to shoot it down. So it was like, yeah, but okay. After this happens in the TV series, Alvin falls in love, and then he brings his new wife over to his aunt and uncle's house, and he and Herman get into a fight because Herman thinks that Alvin doesn't care enough about the state of the world at this point. Lindbergh has gone missing, and they're preparing to have this is 1942 still. So Lindbergh was only president for 2 years before he went missing. And so they're preparing for a special election in November of that year. And Herman doesn't think that Alvin cares enough about the events and, you know, about the upcoming election and everything. And they get into a physical fight, and Alvin leaves angrily. I do wish that they had kept the events the way they happen in the book, because in the book, Alvin falls in love and he brings his fiance over in the middle of, at this point, Charles Lindbergh has gone missing, but the vice president is still in control. And this is before he and Sandy go to Kentucky to rescue Selden. So this is like the height of the anti-Semitic incidents that are going on. And he's just very like aloof and like, my future wife is great, and this is our plans for the future. And so I feel like it was a lot. Obviously, it is still justified in the TV series because we don't know who's going to get elected in this special election of 1942. But I felt it a lot more in the book, simply because, you know, your life is in danger, Alvin. And you're like, so you're in La La Land. You're so like happy and not worried about, you know, you and your fiance, essentially. So I do wish that they had kept that timeline of the books. And then it ends with the special election. And yeah, so not too many changes, as you noticed, between the book and the TV show. Usually I can only focus on the changes, but in this sentence, I was able to focus on the similarities. And overall, I thought, so one thing that Orlando and I were a little confused about is because, you know, each episode of the miniseries focuses on a different month and year. So, you know, we start off in June 1940 and we end in September 1942. So there are big time jumps between episodes. And Orlando was like, well, why aren't we seeing the events of, you know, like we see Alvin and his battalion coming up with the plan of attack. And then we cut to Alvin in the hospital and he's already lost his leg. We see Sandy get on a train to go to Kentucky for Just Folks. And then we cut to Sandy back in Newark giving presentations about Just Folks and his experiences with it. So we were a little annoyed by that, those time jumps. And it's like, well, I kind of want to see what Sandy's up to in Kentucky. And I kind of want to see Alvin in battle. That's the way the book is written. The book also has, it just has this huge time jumps. So yeah, that also matches the book. So we get that. Sandy's a much more likable character in the book. Like I said, I feel like his reasoning for going against his parents' beliefs is a little bit more justified than just, I'm a rebellious teenager. He does, obviously, living, fearing for his life, seeing what the KKK has done to Selden's mom, just really, you know, turns him against Rabbi Bengelsdorf and Aunt Evelyn. And he is once again on his parents' side and everything. So yeah, Zoe Kazan and is great in it. So is Winona Ryder. I mean, honestly, all the actors do a great job in the adaptation. Morgan Spector is Herman Levin. Yeah, honestly, they're great. I will say that I found both the book and the TV series to just be okay. There wasn't anything that, I don't know, there wasn't really anything that made either one stand out to me, good or bad. Seeing and reading this alternate history was interesting, but you know, kind of like You Should Have Known, it seems like the book had so much information and yet not enough. I don't know. It just felt like it wasn't as detailed as You Should Have Known, but there was just like a lot of, I don't know. There's just a lot of, it was like moving so fast, but then it was like slow at the same time. I don't know. Kind of hard to describe, but I rated the book 3 stars and I rated the TV show 3.5. So the TV show wins by 0.5. If you're really into kind of like that revisionist history, I think you'll really enjoy this. But overall, as I said, I found both to be okay. I guess I would recommend the TV show a little bit more than the book based on that half point that I gave the TV show. But honestly, I feel like you don't need to read or watch either one unless you're really, really interested in that subject matter. I think you'll really enjoy one or both. But anyway, that is it for this episode of book versus miniseries. I will catch you next time. Next episode, we will be discussing A Monster Calls by Patrick Ness and its adaptation, A Monster Calls. See you later.